to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, July 26, 2022. An outgoing European diplomat says South Sudan is not ready for elections in 2023.
The country has really run out of excuses and justifications to further delay the graduation and deployment of the necessary unified forces across the country.
And some activists in Sudan say women displaced by recent violence in Blue Nile State need protection.
Women in the camp don't get enough privacy as they used to in their homes. Some of them are pregnant and need special attention.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The outgoing ambassador of the Netherlands to South Sudan, Jelt van Weyren, says the country's leaders have not completed critical tasks to pave way for a democratic environment ahead of the 2023 elections. Van Weyren says the outstanding provisions of the agreement should be implemented to wrap up the transitional period by February 2023. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
Ambassador Jelte van Weyren says South Sudan still lacks a unified professional military that is willing and capable to protect its people. Ambassador van Weyren says the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement have done very little to implement critical tasks stipulated in the deal.
The country has really run out of excuses and justifications to further delay the graduation and deployment of the necessary unified forces across the country. Two, in order to be able to organize credible elections, South Sudan has yet to pass critical legislation in keeping with the revitalized peace agreement's timetable. And three, the continuing boycott by SPLM-IO of the TNLA over the passage of the Political Parties Act is not helpful at all. However, what makes it even worse is that instead of joining forces to discuss and solve the problem, the TNLA has decided to continue approving bills without the opposition. Now, this may be legally possible, but it sure goes against the spirit of cooperation among the parties as stipulated in the peace agreement.
Van Weyren says a lack of political space and civil liberties remains a great challenge in South Sudan. The Dutch diplomat says he doubts elections can be held if people are not allowed to speak their mind.
I cannot imagine how elections can help the country forward if people are not allowed to freely debate how they want to shape their future. The heavy-handed reaction to any kind of criticism to me looks like the government is somehow fearing its own citizens. To give you an example, I keenly followed the debate on dredging and water management recently and learned that international agreements were signed and kept secret. Also, government officials were calling critics of the plans to dredge rivers and dig canals criminals. Such behavior, ladies and gentlemen, to me, sounds detrimental to building trust and confidence between a government and its population.
Ambassador Weyren says the transitional period is about to end in 2023, and it is critical to address the question of how to handle the final phase of the peace agreement.
The Partners Forum welcomes the announcements on the draft roadmap, and we really hope that the follow-up to this will be handled in the spirit of the peace agreement. It is our desire to see that the due process is followed by opening up to all stakeholders, including civil society and all opposition groups within and outside of the country.
The outgoing Dutch envoy says it is difficult to handle the question of continued support to the South Sudan peace monitoring mechanism. He says some partners who have suspended the support for the implementation of the peace deal, which includes the United States, should not be blamed for their decision. Weyren says the reports, conclusions, and recommendations of the peace monitoring mechanism have continued to be ignored by the South Sudan government.
To the monitoring mechanisms are JMAC and CITESAM. Now, we all know that they are facing difficulties because of the suspension of support by the United States. I have seen that many players, including parties to the peace agreement, have openly asked the U.S. to reconsider their decision. Now, I will not speak on behalf of my U.S. colleagues. They are more than capable of doing that for themselves. However, as an ambassador of a mission with substantial development budgets, I frequently have to take decisions on where these budgets are to be invested. And the most important factor in that process is impact. So it is not about the activities that matter most. It is the way in which the results of those activities change the lives of people.
Last week, the U.S. Department of State announced it was ending support for the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission and the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangements Monitoring and Verification Mechanism, saying South Sudan leaders have done very little to implement commitments to bring peace to South Sudan. South Sudan government spokesman Michael McQuay told VOA the U.S. decision came as a shock to Kiir administration and insist that South Sudan leaders have not failed, arguing the government was making what he called significant progress in implementing the peace deal. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
Still on the peace agreement, some South Sudanese politicians and activists say the government of South Sudan has done very little to implement the 28 peace agreement. Government spokesperson Michael McQuay says disgruntled politicians and civil activists do not know what they are saying. For VOA News, David Monodanga has more from Washington.
South Sudan's holdout group, the National Salvation Front, or NAS, refused to sign the 2018 peace agreement. The leader of NAS, General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, said the ongoing constitution-making process and preparations for the 2023 elections would prolong the status quo and add another driver of conflict in the country. General Swaka refused to accept any peace agreement that, in his words, undermines the people's fundamental human rights, subjects the people to discrimination based on ethnic supremacy, and shatters the social fabric of the society. Speaking to young people on a Twitter space held in late June, Rajab Mohandis, executive director of the Organization for Responsive Governance and a member of the Outlawed People's Coalition for Change, says Swaka's predictions might come true.
I think it is incumbent upon those who are signatory to the agreement to prove Thomas and the holdout groups wrong. And they could prove them wrong by implementing the agreement. For example, these guys say, the agreement says cease hostilities, protect civilians, improve on the humanitarian conditions. What is wrong with doing some of these things?
South Sudan's Minister of Information and the government spokesperson, Michael McQuay, told a panel during a special edition of VOA's Straight Talk Africa program in Juba that the partners to the 2018 peace agreement have made what he called significant progress.
Chapter 2 is the most expensive. There are so many requirements and so many proceedings to be conducted. However, despite all these difficulties, well, of course, one of them is the finances. We don't have the necessary required resources for funding this process.
But Lam Akol, leader of the National Democratic Movement, says the Artigunu is using delaying tactics to stay in power. Akol says South Sudan cannot conduct elections when people's rights are being violated.
All the freedoms, whether for the parties or for the journalists or for the individuals, the freedom of movement, people must be free to move around the country. The security should be enabling rather than obstructing. And that's why we insist that there must be a new security apparatus in the country that is loyal to the country, not loyal to individuals or political groups.
South Sudan's Minister for Peace Building, Stephen Parkwall, told panelists at a special edition of VOA's Straight Talk Africa program that his group, the SPLA-IO, loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar, is not afraid of participating in elections. He says the partners to the 2018 peace deal have worked towards implementing some chapters of the agreement.
We have maintained this permanent ceasefire because transitional security arrangement is not only the graduation of forces. It was contournment of forces, assembling of forces, barracking of forces, unifying the forces, training them together. We have accomplished this in our training centers. We are left only with the graduation of forces.
Wani Michael, former executive director of the OK Africa Foundation, who fled to exile last year, and moderated the Twitter space discussion in late June, says there's no freedom of speech in South Sudan.
There's no freedom of the media. The media has been censored. Even with the agreement, which is supposed to open up civil and political space, some of the civil society activists had to leave the country because they've been hunted for. So if you're talking about elections, the environment ought to be conducive. The media ought to be independent. Nobody needs to be detained. We saw there's increased harassment and detention of journalists.
Akol says it's inevitable that the Artiguno will continue to face challenges in implementing the 2018 peace agreement by the end of the transitional period.
The conversation that will take place regarding what to do after the expiry of the peace agreement and the transitional government of national unity on the 22nd of February 2023 should include all the opposition groups, because if their apprehension was about that agreement, yes, that thing is gone. The agreement has not been implemented. Yes, the prediction became right. But now we are trying to see the way forward.
Makwe says disgruntled politicians and activists do not know what they are saying.
The activists are here agitators. They are people who are not ready to listen and argue our issues. So please, if you are asking me because of the activist opinion, this is not time for activism. My advice to the activists is to listen and do the right thing. Say the right thing, not to negatively agitate for no reason.
Lam Akol and Rajab Mohandis have warned that the recent fighting between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and civilians in Tonch could lead to what they called uprising and a coup, because in their words, soldiers may become more disgruntled for not getting paid on time. The U.S. government suspended its support for the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission 2 weeks ago. The U.S. Department of State issued a statement saying the signatories of the 2018 peace deal have done little to implement the peace agreement. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Washington.
Some women activists from Sudan's Blue Nile state are calling on military leaders to protect women they say are exposed to many forms of violence. An executive member of a local nonprofit says thousands of women in camps should be protected after they were forced to flee their homes during recent intercommunal fighting in Blue Nile state. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Some activists from Blue Nile say thousands of displaced women sheltering in public buildings across Adamazin, Ruseris, and other locations are allegedly exposed to various forms of abuse, including sexual violence. Speaking to this program in Khartoum shortly after returning from Blue Nile on Monday, Suzanne Hassan Saad from the Network for Promotion of Gender Equality says women in camps for internal displaced persons lack privacy due to the congested environment in the camps. She says most women are traumatized and need psychosocial support.
Women in the camp don't get enough privacy as they used to in their homes. Some of them are pregnant and need special attention in Al-Damazin camp. I met some of them who gave birth, and some gave birth to twins. Some of them lost their husbands, and they don't know if they are alive.
Violence erupted in Blue Nile last week between two tribes following a dispute over land. More than 100 people were killed and at least 200 others were injured during 3 days of fighting. The UN says more than 20,000 people were displaced by the violence and need urgent humanitarian support. Saad says the fighting separated many families.
Some rumors would say they have traveled. Some ended up in separate camps, and some don't know where their loved ones are. When fighting broke out, they grabbed the kids and ran for their lives while the husbands were at work.
Late last week, the United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in Sudan, Khardiata Londiaye, says aid agencies were dispatched to the area to identify the needs of the displaced. Zahra Ali Kua, another Blue Nile women rights activist, says the violence has interrupted many social peace initiatives, including civic education, stemming from the Juba Peace Agreement. She says civic engagement is needed to help women in the area know their rights.
تم توقيع السلام يعني كان في استقرار.
After signing of the Juba peace agreement, there was some relative calm and stability in the region. Some groups have already started civic education about the peace agreement. There were still some voices within the area complaining about the lack of grassroots consultation during the peace negotiation.
Kuwa called on Blue Nile state authorities and rival tribes to engage in a genuine dialogue and work towards ending intercommunal violence in Blue Nile. She says fighting often slows development in the state.
أنا بتمنى المزولين في إقليم النيل.
My only wish is that our leaders in the Blue Nile should try to resolve their political differences and speak with one voice. They should strive to seek positivity rather than negativity that divide people. There are things that unite all of us and bring respect to everybody.
Intercommunal conflicts have been rampant in other states of Sudan, especially in Darfur, Kordofan, and Eastern Sudan since the fall of longtime ruler Omar al-Bashir in April 2019. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, some Sudanese activists say the military rulers in their country are not serious about change. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you start a conversation on a sensitive topic or issue?
First of all, you need to know the context, and you need to know what you are going to talk about and why they have brought it in that particular time. Okay. And from there, you make maybe after the introduction, you build the main body and you conclude.
You first need to put out the key things which you want to talk about, which can even capture the interest of the people. Because if you start with something which people doesn't have interest in, they will not give you time to give up what you want to tell them.
You have to know about the issue, and you have to know how to approach the issue. You have to even know how to tackle the issue, and you even have to study on how to speak on the issue to avoid conflict.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, deputy head of Sudanese Sovereign Council, said the military handed over to civilians so that they can focus on defense and security. He meets says Sudanese political forces should start forming transitional institutions through dialogue followed by free and fair elections. A spokesperson for Forces of Freedom and Change says they consider that statement as another proof the military is serious. While a spokesperson for Sudanese Professional Association said Hemeti's statement offers nothing new since the general control all major keys in Sudan. Cameron Hudson, a senior associate at Center for Strategic and International Studies, discussed these developments with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
Well, the statement was originally made by the head of the army, General Burhan, about 2 weeks ago now. And so the fact that General Hemeti is essentially saying the same thing that was already said, I think is an effort for him to remain relevant and to demonstrate that even if the military decrees something, it remains in question unless the RSF, the force that he controls, goes along with it. And so this was him signaling that not only does he support the position of the military, but I think trying to demonstrate that he is a power and a force unto himself who also has to sign off on these kinds of government decrees unless we think that they won't go forward.
A spokesperson for Forces of Freedom and Change considered that statement as another proof that the military is serious, while a spokesperson for the Sudanese Professional Association said that Hemeti's statement offers nothing new since the generals control all major keys in Sudan. Could that lead to more division and a continued stalemate in the Sudanese political crisis?
Well, I think what the statement by General Hemeti is doing is trying to put pressure on Sudanese political actors to continue the political crisis. Very clearly, there has been not a lot of forward momentum in the political talks, but by stepping away from the political talks, the military is removing itself from the blame game that is going on in Khartoum, putting all responsibility on civilians to determine the future course of the political makeup, while at the same time, the military is consolidating the control over the elements of the politics and society of the country and the economics of the country that it has a direct interest and stake in. So the military is, I think, being rather cute in trying to create political problems for pro-democracy groups, while at the same time, basically just ensuring that its own political and economic interests are guaranteed.
Hamid, you pointed out that the latest wave of tribal conflicts in Sudan as an imminent threat to Sudan's unity, adding that the country is going through the most dangerous crisis in its modern history. Did that crisis genuinely motivate the military to respond to public pressure to restore democracy in Sudan?
Let's remember that the cause of the crisis in Sudan is the military. It is the role of the RSF and the military. They have created this crisis. And so here you have General Hometi serving essentially as arsonist and firefighter. He creates the problems and then presents himself as a solution to those problems. And so, again, I just think that this is a very disingenuous way that the military has over many decades now created the problem of insecurity in the country and then presented itself as the only solution to solving that insecurity, when in fact it is just merely an effort to undermine civilian rule in the country.
The military coup not only created a political crisis, but also led to a severe economic crisis in Sudan. What's the way out of both the political and the economic crisis in Sudan?
Well, it's very simple. The military needs to give up power. It needs to give up its control over 80% of the economy. You have a military state in Sudan, and so there can be no political outcome or economic outcome that benefits the majority of the Sudanese people as long as the vast majority of power and wealth in the country is concentrated in the hands of a very small few in the military.
That's Cameron Hudson, a senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. Malawian President Lazarus Chikwera is calling for a new approach to fighting corruption, which he says is widespread in the country. Speaking during the launch of a two-day national conference against graft in Blantyre, Chikwera said he is worried about the increase in levels of fraud and mismanagement. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
President Chakwera says the country needs to strengthen its anti-corruption laws to ensure that all bodies fighting it operate without local and international influence. He is asking the Malawi Parliament to look again into anti-graft laws and effect comprehensive changes where they are needed.
We have designated the 20 weeks between now and the National Anti-Corruption Day in December as a time to campaign against corruption across Malawi, a time to reset the moral tone of our nation through a special and intensified anti-corruption campaign across the country.
Chakwera says during this time, all stakeholders should make known their commitments toward dealing with corruption. He said the conference shows his renewed effort to fulfill his campaign promise to fight against fraud and mismanagement.
Just as it was between 2019 and 2020, when we realized that electoral fraud was so entrenched that it would require relentless and concerted effort from everyone to defeat it, we must once again accept that state corruption is so entrenched that it demands the designing and deployment of a new approach, one that involves a relentless and concerted effort from all stakeholders to fight and campaign against all forms of state corruption.
Last month, President Chakwera fired Inspector General of Police George Gainja, suspended the Chief of Staff at the State House, Priest Kapondangaga, and stripped some official duties from his Vice President, Saulos Chilima. The three were among several government officials accused of accepting kickbacks in return for government contracts. In his remarks at the conference, Minister of Justice Titus Imvalo said initiatives are in place to curb the practice.
Among them, my ministry is working with other key stakeholders towards the creation of a financial crimes court. The bill that's going to put that court into creation is the Court Amendment Bill 2022. And that bill, Your Excellency, I can confirm, will be presented to Parliament at this sitting of Parliament.
However, anti-corruption authorities and legal experts argue that Malawi already has legislation against graft, and the problem is enforcement. Malawi ranked 110 out of 180 countries in the report on perception of corruption released by Transparency International. Ezirion Kasoka is the corruption prevention officer at the Malawi's Anti-Corruption Bureau. He blames the increased number of cases on the lack of mechanisms to enhance delivery of public services.
We hear, for instance, at the National Registration Bureau, there are delays in processing of IDs. We hear of suspected cases of corruption with police officers. We hear delays at the Road Traffic Directorate. We hear missing of taxes at MRIA and many other public institutions. We can do better.
The conference, whose theme is resetting the country's moral tone, is expected to end Tuesday with recommendations from stakeholders on how Malawi can best fight the vice. I am Lamek Masina for VOA News in Blantyre, Malawi.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zamankuru Juja. To Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zamankuru Juja. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thank you.